Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for tuning in to the Vigilance Press podcast. My name is James Dossie. I'm the owner and publisher of Vigilance Press and your host tonight. We are having a very special episode tonight. We're going to do a pronunciation guide for our new role-playing game, Tien Sha, Blood, Silk, and Jade. But since I am not an expert on pronouncing Chinese words, I have invited someone who is, Robin Milliken. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm great. How's the weather up where you are?
It is nice and sunny in New Jersey.
Excellent. So I met Robin this past JFAX, which is a Japanese art and film expo up in Michigan. I've been a guest there for over 10 years, and every time I go up, I get to meet really exciting, cool people. Robin was one of the volunteers at the convention who was extremely excited about Tien Sha. So I'm going to give you a moment to introduce yourself, or in just a moment, but before that, let me let people know that by the time you hear this recording, we should have released our first fiction piece since I took over Vigilance Press. There's a novel by Darren Drader. It's called Legacy of Ruin, and it's going to be tied in with our Nuclear Sunset line of role-playing game products. So if you're interested in post-apocalyptic action-adventure and you know, kind of cool Gamma World-like adventuring, check that out. I'll post a link on the Vigilance Press website for that. But now, getting back to our guest, Robin, how long have you been interested in role-playing games and so forth, and tabletop games?
Well, I learned about role-playing games, as I think that many people do, in college, as an impressionable young freshman. and that's actually right when D&D 4.0 was being rolled out.
Okay.
And some of the new friends I had made wanted to try it out, and that was the first role-playing game I ever played.
Fantastic.
This is quite a nice introduction, but now I'm a die-hard 3.5 fan.
So. Well, that's cool. Have you seen any of the stuff that's out there now for the new edition of D&D?
I actually haven't. I'm not very good at keeping up with things like that online, so I rely on what people have been telling me.
Oh, okay.
And most of the people I hang out now tend to like very different style. Not very different, but many other kinds of role-playing games, so we don't only talk about D&D so much.
That's cool. Yeah, if you're interested, they have the new rules, the basic rules, as a free downloadable PDF. It's kind of like a free-to-play model where you can get the free basic core rules and just download them. And then if you want, you can start buying their products as they roll out the books.
Yeah, I did hear that.
Yeah, which is kind of interesting approach to it. Mm-hmm. But getting back to Tien Sha, why do I have you on the show? Why? When did you learn to speak Chinese?
I learned to speak Chinese before I learned how to speak English. it is my mother tongue.
Yeah, excellent. What is which version? Most people understand that there are two versions of Chinese: Cantonese and Mandarin. What do you speak?
I speak Mandarin. Yes. Mm-hmm.
And how would you contrast the two? They're not really dialects.
It's actually quite interesting if you want to actually get into the history of linguistics, but Cantonese is much closer to ancient Chinese in pronunciation.
Okay.
And Mandarin would be more like a modern standardized Chinese, but they are different enough that you can't really understand each other, so I wouldn't call it a dialect.
Right.
Yeah.
So, but they do come together a bit in the writing, correct? Where they could write to each other?
Yes. Chinese is set up in such a way that the writing does not inherently imply pronunciation. It only implies meaning.
Mm-hmm.
So even if you don't speak a person's dialect, if they write everything down, you can still understand each other.
That's pretty neat.
It's a very good way of doing it.
Yes. So, How would you, before we get into specific words from Tian Sha, and actually let's start with Tian Sha. Am I saying that even close to correctly?
Close. You're saying it close. it is Tian Sha.
Tian Sha.
Yes.
All right. I'll try and remember that. So Tian Sha, how would you contrast the sound of Chinese and we're talking Mandarin. How would you contrast the sound of that with the sound of English in general?
That's an interesting question. I'm not sure. It's hard for me because I know them both so well that it's hard to sort of think about it from an outside point of view. But Chinese words are only one syllable.
Mm-hmm.
So, to me, it seems like there in Chinese there's a lot more repetition of syllables that would sound silly in English.
Okay.
Like you hear the same one syllable over and over again, whereas in English everything flows together.
Right. You have a sort of rise and fall in English a cadence. That's different from Chinese.
And in Chinese, the tone of the word changes the meaning of the word, whereas in English, the tone that you use in your sentence changes sort of your intentions.
Mm-hmm. So it would be different from me saying yeah sarcastically. If we were talking about Chinese, changing the tone would actually change the meaning completely.
Yes, it's a totally different word. It's not related at all.
Can you give us a quick example of something like that?
Yes. Well, the classic example sort of used to teach tone when you're learning Chinese is using the syllable ma, which is just M-A.
Mm-hmm.
So ma, with the first tone on that high level, ma, that would be mother.
Okay.
Ma, with a rising tone, is hemp.
Okay.
Ma, with a low dip, is horse.
Okay.
And ma, with a high falling, is to scold, to yell at someone.
Those are some extremely different uses of the same syllable.
Yes.
So one of the things that I want to encourage people to do with Tian Sha is not to get hung up on the I don't want people to think of we're requiring them to be dialects correct. We don't want you to be a polyglot just to speak this, just to play this role-playing game. But we wanted to kind of give you guys a chance to listen to the sound of the words and think about how you could use some of these phrases to add flavor to your game. So we're gonna hit some of the more popular or more common words in the Tian Sha role-playing game. And I'm probably gonna just go through the glossary of terms to start with and pull out some of these words and maybe give you a chance to kind of talk about literal translations as well as you know, the overall meanings as they're presented here. I'm going to skip the adherence of the Tao. How would you say the Tao or the Dao?
It would be Dao.
Dao?
Yes, it's a D, but it's a bit more aspirated, is the technical term, than a D we might use like at the end of a sentence. So it's D as in daddy, or Dao, like that.
Dao. Okay.
Yeah.
And obviously, as with the other religious names in our setting, we're kind of borrowing or hinting at the flavor of modern day or historical Taoism, but we're actually mostly taking the flavor and not trying to make a commentary on the actual religion.
Okay.
And I think that that was clear in the glossary here. Now, the word chi. It is a word that pops up a lot in both Chinese and Japanese martial arts related fiction. I've actually seen the Japanese pronounce it ki, and I've seen it spelled with a chi or with a qi. How do you pronounce it?
I pronounce it chi.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, very close to what you said, so it's correct. It's the same thing.
Okay.
Yeah.
And is that indicative of how, like, a Q would normally be used? Like, QI?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, exactly.
So when you see it spelled with a QI, you're not seeing it spelled incorrectly. It's just chi with a CH is a little easier to communicate to non-Chinese speakers.
Exactly.
All right, and then our next one is the Great River. So I'll let you say that one.
It is the Da Jiang.
Okay. And can you, obviously we tried to make that one as literal as possible. Can you tell us a little bit about the, you said each of those syllables is a different word. So how many words are we actually looking at?
Well, I mean, it's just like in the English, it's Da means big.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the big river, okay. But big implies greatness as well.
Okay. And Jiang is just river.
Jiang is river, yes.
Okay. And this was, of course, one of the waterways, and this kind of brings me all the way up to our country's name, which I'll let you go ahead and say for us.
Jiangzhou. Right?
Right. And I have a question about the, you know, since this is our first word that actually had the accent marks over it.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people might look at those accent marks and find them a little intimidating because, or confusing, because like with the long O over the O in an English dictionary, they're going to see that means O instead of a different pronunciation. It's the long vowel. What does it mean when you're looking at a Chinese word when you see these marks?
That just indicates the tone.
Okay.
Like the four tones we used with the ma, ma syllable. Mm-hmm. The straight line just means it's the first tone. It's high and level.
Okay. So again, if you would repeat that for me.
Jiangzhou.
Jiangzhou.
Yes. So I didn't change, I didn't go up or down with my tone.
Okay.
At all. It's just level.
Okay. And we also have, since the next step we're talking about is the emperor.
Mm-hmm.
He is the ruler of Jiangzhou. He is also known as, the word we have here is the Huangdi. How would you say that?
That is Huangdi.
Huangdi. And can you give us an explanation of what that means?
Huangdi is the yellow emperor.
Mm-hmm.
Di is emperor, the ruler, and Huang is literally yellow. And in ancient China, only the emperor was allowed by law to wear gold.
Okay.
To wear, like, robes or clothes in the color of gold.
So
that's sort of like his status is by his gold. So he's Excellent. The yellow emperor.
Cool. And that actually clicks into a lot of the titles and names. If anybody's thinking about kung fu movies or kung fu cinema, a lot of companies, like there's Golden Harvest other names with gold in them. It's a lucky or exclusive color. So then we go down to the Son of Heaven, or Tianzi. How do I say that correctly?
It is Tianzi.
I'm sorry, Tianzi?
Yes. Okay. The Z is sort of a TS, sort of a Z sound.
Okay. So Tianzi. And yep. The I with the curve mark over it?
That is that low dip tone.
Okay. Excellent. So, then we have the eunuchs, which we don't really introduce any new words. The followers of Bodhisattva. I'm not sure if Buddhists, since it's kind of a permutation on Buddhism, would that have a Chinese pronunciation?
Well, in China, the Buddha is called the Fo, F-O.
Mm-hmm.
And so Buddhists are called the followers of Fo. But Bodhisattvas are very big in China as well.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't seen any mention of this, but in China, one of the biggest Bodhisattvas that is followed, especially by women, is... in English, her name is the Bodhisattva that looks upon the world with compassion.
Okay.
And she is known as Guan Yin, Guanyin.
Excellent.
And so she's, if people are playing a female character, that could be sort of a Bodhisattva that they would maybe put offerings to.
Very cool. All right. And of course, the artisans and craftsmen is the next one. The gong, how would you say that?
That's gong. Yeah, that's right. For gong, actually, it ties into a lot of things. It's gong means the art of something.
Mm-hmm.
So when we say gong fu a few lines down, the gong is actually the same gong. They're the gong fu masters are people who have their gong as martial arts, basically.
Okay.
Instead of their gong as making something or as an artisan.
Very cool. And in our fictional culture, they make up the middle class. Let's see. The Jade Road, we used English. All right. Now, for this, a lot of people who are familiar with the term the Wu Lin, in our setting, we tend to use the word Jianghu. Now, you can correct me on that one.
Jianghu.
Jianghu.
Mm-hmm.
All right. And how would that translate?
Jiang is the same Jiang for river.
Mm-hmm.
And Hu actually means a lake.
Okay.
So it's river lake. But that's not what it means, obviously.
Obviously.
It is the society that martial artists interact in. It is their social circle. It is their world that they move through.
Yep. And we sort of use it in a ranking system for our setting and for our game to kind of differentiate a person who has just begun on the path of Kung Fu to somebody who is a master. That ranking system has mechanical benefits. But everyone who is part of the Jianghu has some understanding of their place outside of the normal society. Now, a lot of we're also going to use the word wuxia or wuxia a lot. Is that correct?
Wuxia, yes.
Wuxia. I've been saying that wuxia for the longest time.
The X is not really an SH sound. It's an SH sound if you smile real wide and make it more, I don't know. It's hard to explain. Xia.
So it's xia. So it's
yes.
Wuxia, and in our setting, Wuxia are wandering kung fu masters. It's kind of like a knight errant or a ronin. How would you translate Wuxia more literally?
Wu means martial. Mm-hmm. Anything related to war or fighting will have that Wu in there. And then Xia is a term for a person, like a knight or something, but they're not attached to someone. They're not the servants of a lord, and they're not in the military.
So there's a lot being conveyed in that short word.
Yes. Like Ronin, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But the xia part designates that they that the what kind of a person they are, and the wu tells you that it's part that they are martial.
Very cool. Now the next one is the term for the borderland, which is the province that Blood, Silk, and Jade, the first book, covers largely in detail. Would you pronounce the Chinese word for it?
Jiangzhou.
Jiangzhou.
Yeah.
Now Jiangzhou is only the first of the settings that we're doing, but it takes place on the western edge of Shenzhou. Did I say that? I butchered that.
Shenzhou.
Yeah. So tell us what connotations. I mean, we tried to make it literally borderland, but Jiangzhou, what connotations does that have?
Well, first of all, Jiang is not the same Jiang used for Jianghu or Da Jiang. It's not the word for river. It's a totally different character. But Jiang does literally mean border or like hinterlands. It's the edge. It's the frontier. And Zhou is a very common word used in many Chinese place names. It can mean like, it means land. So you have it exactly right, but I'm trying to think of a different sort of feeling for it.
Well, I think, extrapolating from what you've said, it's pretty much the wild edges or the frontier.
Yes.
Is what we were going for, so.
And Joe is a word they use, I guess, kind of like in England they would use shire on the ends of things to designate that it's a land that's bigger than a city. It's like a province.
Excellent. Thank you. And then, of course, we have Kung Fu, which I've also seen spelled Gong Fu, G-O-N-G, and you pronounced it that way. How could you say it again in Chinese for me?
Gong Fu.
Gong Fu.
Yes. The Kung part of it is a very Cantonese pronunciation.
Okay.
With a K.
Ah, interesting. So, and that essentially describes various styles and sub-styles that in our setting we use, but it's in general, it's a fighting technique or a martial art. And see, we talk a little bit about legalism, and now we get to the peasants and farmers, the lowest social class, which would be the Nong.
That's exactly right.
Okay. And what other connotations does that have? I mean, is there a literal translation that might illuminate us a little more?
Well, Nong only has to do with farming and working land. So peasants and farmers is exactly correct.
Okay.
You're not going to have factory workers who are Nong. It's people who are tied to their land and who work it.
So in feudal medieval England, for example, you would probably use the term serf.
Exactly, yeah.
Okay.
That's a really good one. That's really good.
So next we talk about the security companies, and then we get to the merchants and traders, the Shang.
Shang, yeah.
Shang, and I'm starting to get good at this.
Exactly.
You're supposed to correct me more often.
You just have to practice. It's not hard.
So, how often of course it's pronounced, or it's spelled S-H-A-N-G, and a lot of people would look at that and say Shang. Would there ever be a correct time to use A that way in Chinese, or is that pretty much, are you always going to use it as an A?
Always as an A.
Okay.
The Chinese romanization, where they write it out, like English, is actually quite good, where the letters only have one pronunciation usually.
Okay. And that actually takes me to a little sidebar. I know Japanese has a very similar vowel set to Spanish, where it's a, I, u, a, o. How complex is the vowel set for Chinese?
It is pretty much exactly that.
Okay.
I'm looking down just this page here, and you have the A is A. The letter A is just A.
Mm-hmm.
The letter O is O. The letter I is E. And the letter, where is it? Well, the letter E is U. And the letter U is U. So A, E, E, O, U is your five letters.
Okay.
Your five vowels.
Excellent. So talking about the Shang, the merchants and traders, can you tell us a little bit more about that word?
That word Shang is still used now to anything. What is the word they have? Shang Jie means the sort of world of trade.
Okay.
So they still use that word. It's exactly that, where it's about making money by trading things, where not like producing things, which you have the gong and the nong for.
Okay. And then moving down, in Japanese, you know, of course we call it sensei, or in English we call it master, but the honor of it given to masters and teachers in Chinese, how do you say that?
师父.
师父.
Yes, it should actually be an S-H-I.
Okay.
But we will gloss over that. when in Chinese, with their current way of writing out, with their romanization,
mm-hmm.
when it's an S-H-I or a C-H-I or a Z-H-I, the I kind of turns into an R sound.
Okay.
So it's like, I like to say for C-H-I, it's like the beginning of the word church, where it's just the ch part.
Okay.
So instead of C-H, it's S-H, it's just sh.
Okay. So instead of sifu, it would be shifu.
Yes.
Okay. All right. That's something I didn't know.
It's,
and then,
it's
of
a bit
course,
weird.
What's that?
And it's a bit weird with the I not even really making a sound.
Now, beyond being an honorific, what other connotations does that word have? Is it ever used outside of martial arts?
Yes, it's for anyone who's a master at anything, really. Unlike in Japanese, where they use sensei for teachers,
mm-hmm.
shifu is not used for teachers. It is only used for someone that you're learning a craft from.
Okay.
Like in school, you would not use it, but if you're learning martial arts, or if you're learning how to make pottery, or how to do calligraphy, or how to carve jade, all of those types of things, they would be your shifu.
Excellent. All right.
And it can also be for just really learned people who aren't necessarily teaching in a organized setting.
Mm-hmm.
They're just really respected.
It's a very similar use to the Japanese word sensei, which
yes.
bleeds over from teacher to meaning. It's also an honorific used for doctors and other professionals.
Yes. Now, the difference in Chinese is that if the person is respected in their field, like if they're a doctor, you mm-hmm. would refer to them as doctor.
Okay.
And if they're a professor, you call them professor.
Okay.
Shifu is sort of used for the things that don't have any particular other specific word for it.
Okay. And now we go down to the collective name for the people of Shenzhou, which is the first syllable, Shen.
Shen, okay.
Yeah, and we defined that as essentially the people of the country, the countrymen of that of our make-believe nation. What does Shen mean specifically?
I believe in this case, though I haven't seen a character and the meaning can change based on the character used, I believe it means God, actually.
Okay.
So Shenzhou would mean land of God.
Okay.
And in Chinese, people tend to add Ren, R-E-N, which means people, mm-hmm. after the name of the place.
So if you wanted to be a little more accurate to Chinese, you can call the people of the land Shenzhou Ren.
Yes.
Okay.
Which is maybe needlessly complicated.
Yeah, we simplified it a bit for ours because we wanted people to be able to kind of refer to, if they wanted to do something with a foreign culture interacting with the characters of Shenzhou, that we could just, kind of abbreviate to Shenese instead of Chinese, since there was a similarity there. But
yeah. I hadn't noticed that similarity.
Kind of a portmanteau there.
So that works.
Yep. So in the next one, we're talking about, again, the Divine Realm that we just detailed, the Shenzhou. You already mentioned that it was the realm of God.
Mm-hmm.
And then we go on to the next class of people, the nobles and scholars, called the Shi. Now, is that Shi?
Yes, it is.
Okay. So, tell us a little bit more about what that word means by itself.
Shi by itself, I've mostly seen it used to refer to someone when they're sort of below Shi Fu. They haven't quite reached that level of power or talent. Or they're just not old enough yet to be called Shi Fu.
Okay.
And so I think nobles and scholars is a really great way to use that word.
Cool.
It's less used now in modern Chinese, so you won't hear it very often.
Okay.
But it's a good word for it.
Now we come to, I'm going to skip over Silk River since that was just English, but in our setting, we call all of everything that we're publishing under this title, it's kind of our name for this series as much as it is anything to do with the setting, but Tianxia.
Mm-hmm.
We offer the translation of Under Heaven, and talking about cultural unification. How would you literally translate it?
Well, Tian means sky.
Mm-hmm.
And Xia is down. But down or below,
mm-hmm.
or under. So it's under the sky. But the Chinese concept of divinity before Buddhism was about Tian. They didn't have sort of a heaven concept. Their word for it was just sky. So that works really well. Tianxia is actually a very culturally relevant and historied word in Chinese. It's been used a lot in a lot of very ancient writings. And even now in songs and things, they'll still reference it. So it's a very Chinese word.
Okay. And, let's see, moving on. Okay, we talked about Wuxia already.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the next step is, we actually provide a graph for this, but I'm going to try and pronounce this. The Wuxing.
Wuxing, yes.
Wuxing. All right, and this is, we described it as our interpretation of the system of connected colors, seasons, directions, and animals that figure heavily into folklore and legend. How would you translate it, and what's your experience with the phrase?
Well, Wu is the number 5.
Okay.
And Xing is the word for, like, shape.
Okay.
Very, very simply is the word for shape. And I don't know if you've seen this in, like, the ancient Chinese fortune-telling book, the I Ching.
Mm-hmm.
They use this, and it's sort of, it's that collection of lines that are either whole or broken in a set of three.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not very familiar with it. It's a very Taoist sort of a thing that I haven't had the opportunity to learn much about. But it's used to figure your feng shui and see where you should put your plant in your house and to see which day is good for moving and which day is good to have your son's wedding on and all that sort of thing.
So lots of fortune telling and looking for spiritual synergy with your environment.
Yes, and it's not so much spiritual in a way of how we think of morality being spiritual.
Mm-hmm.
It's spiritual in a sort of harmony with your environment and what is auspicious and what's good luck.
Okay. Very cool. Yeah, that's actually a very big part of the Chinese wuxia fiction, and especially when it gets into the magic and mysticism of the genre. And that's why we touched on it in this book, but we're probably going to talk a little bit more about that. Ryan Macklin is working on our spiritual supplement that'll have the magic system in it right now, and Jack is developing that with him. So next we have, I'm going to actually pull these out of alphabetical order slightly so that we can talk about them at the same time. We have the very famous black and white circular image that most Americans know as the yin-yang or the yin-yang. How do you say those two words?
Yin-yang.
Yin-yang.
The A is the ah sound instead of the a sound.
Right, correct. And those have a lot of... well, they're pretty broad meanings for those two, and they're those two opposing concepts.
Yes.
Tell me a little bit about the yin.
Well, first for both of them together, I think it's important to tie them to qi, which we talked about earlier.
Okay.
Both of these forces have to do with your qi, your energy, or the energy of the things around you.
Okay.
So I would like for all three of them to be together, but they can't. So I would say qi is all of them, and then yang is the masculine and hot one, qis, and yin is the feminine and cold qis.
Okay.
And I do see you have in here that yin is not inherently bad, and yang is not inherently good, even though yang is sort of seen as positive and yin is seen as negative. What's really important for these two concepts in Chinese culture is that there's a balance. And like men have more yang forces in them, but if they had no yin, they would be sick. And it ties into medicine where you have to eat things that are good for certain types of qi.
Okay.
And so so yin is things like you have in the book that are proactive, that are masculine, that have heat. And in my own life, I've mostly had experience with them as foods. So yang foods would be fried or very oily foods, and then yin, which is the feminine and the cold side of things, would be like bitter cold teas and things would be very yin. And I think for gameplay it's good to think about them in terms of how they balance, and it could be fun to incorporate acts or deeds you must do to sort of maintain the balance of your yin and yang in your own life.
Yeah, I think Jack actually called out in it was in a section on inclusiveness, but he actually mentioned that there was a series, I believe it's called The Swordsman, and or it was either a series or a movie. It was a Wuxia movie that the main character was studying ways to adjust or tap into different elements of his chi. And was able to focus more towards masculine or feminine side. And when he did so, he would actually change genders. Like if he was practicing more of the feminine gender, he would actually be played by an actress.
Well, that's very interesting.
Yeah.
I need to look that up.
All right. So we have yin yang and go ahead and say it again for me.
Yin yang.
Yin yang.
Yes.
I'm gonna have to train myself because I've said yang for so long that I don't even think about it. I have to stop that. And then, of course, we have the word for outsider or barbarian as yi.
Yi, yes.
Yi. Okay. Tell us a little bit more about the connotations of that word.
It really is sort of like the Roman concept of barbarian, where they're uncultured and different and don't speak the language and therefore are just not really worth it. But with China, you also have the history of barbarians coming down from the north, like the Mongols and the various nomadic tribes, coming down from the north to attack. So it's also seen as very threatening when people are different.
Okay. In our setting, we use the term as not necessarily pejorative, but often used as such. We also mentioned that sometimes the term "hu" is used. Is that, am I saying that right?
Hu.
Hu.
Yeah.
And what would be the difference in the two terms?
I'm not sure I've ever heard the term "hu" used.
Okay.
So I don't know. I'm sure it has been.
It might be.
But when I was living in China, I was living in the south, and it might have been a term used more in the north that I wouldn't have heard.
Okay. And then, of course, we get to the name for centerland, which is Zhongzhou.
Zhongzhou, yes.
Zhongzhou. That's the core province. In our setting, where the imperial city and the emperor's palace will be, and that's actually going to be one of supplement that I believe Jack really has his eye on doing certain specific things with when we get to that, but I can't talk about that yet. So tell us a little bit about what those words mean and any additional connotations they might have.
Well, Zhou, we've already talked about before, is sort of being a province,
mm-hmm.
or a land. And Zhong is actually, means exactly middle.
Mm-hmm.
And it is the word that the Chinese use for their country now. China, right now in Chinese, is Zhongguo, Zhong country, the middle country. Because the Chinese see themselves and their country as the middle of the world. They're the center of where things happen. And they were for several periods of history.
Yep.
But it's a very... I mean, I think that Americans or Europeans would see Europe or America as the center of the world. And if you look at a map, you'll have America in the middle because that's where it should be. but in China, of course, they feel differently, and sort of it carries that concept where who we are and what we are is the middle of what the world revolves around.
Right. From wherever you stand, the horizon is equally distant from you.
Yes.
So, let's see. Now, I think that's all of the baseline terms, and we've reached about an hour here on the podcast, so I think that's a... Oh, actually, wait, no. I'm sorry. We have we've still got some time. Let's do a couple more here real quick and just kind of like hit some of the specific names. Let's see if I can find some of the cool... Let's look at the table of contents here real quick and just pull out some names. Like Fisheye Cheng of the Blue Carp Brotherhood. Would you say Cheng?
Chung.
Chung. So Fisheye Chung.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And Heartless Eye?
Heartless Eye, yes.
Okay.
Of Northern and Southern High.
Yes.
That is supposed to be ocean, right? Let me see. 34.
Twin villages along the northern and southern banks.
Oh, of the silver. Okay. High is sometimes ocean.
Okay.
But this might be a different word. And without the characters, it's a little bit harder to see.
And decide mother,
what it would be.
So we have the character Mother Shen.
Shen, yeah.
And let's see. Ah, and then, of course, Black Bao Yun.
Black Bao Yun. Okay. The U there has an umlaut on it, or should.
Mm-hmm.
So it's more of a U sound.
Okay.
If you know German at all.
Ich spreche ein bisschen Deutsch.
Okay, so you know what a umlaut is. There you go.
Yes. So, I probably just mangled the pronunciation on that. It's been a while since I've spoken any German. What would his name mean? Black Bao Yun.
Bao means treasure.
Mm-hmm.
And Yun is see, now that I have the Chinese in it, the English is gone. Cloud. It's cloud. I get stuck sometimes.
Let's talk about character names a little bit. In Wuxia stories and in our role-playing game we take a bit of, we have a little fun with mixing up the English phrases and the Chinese names, like the next character Yao Jing, or
Yao Jing,
also known as the Red Spear. Now, what does Yao Jing mean?
That, it really could mean anything.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said before, it's sometimes hard to tell what things could be without seeing the character, because so many characters are pronounced very similarly.
Okay.
Or exactly the same, sometimes.
Okay.
So
setting that aside, you know, the idea of being able to pull, you know, from names that sound good. How do the Chinese usually name their children? Do they usually look for a name that has a particular meaning, or how often do they pull from like the history of their family? Like, I want to give him my grandfather's name or what have you.
They tend not to name their children exactly the same name.
Mm-hmm.
And there is actually a tradition of generational names. Chinese names usually have three syllables, the first being the family name, the surname.
Mm-hmm.
And the second, it's used less and less now, but I think for this setting it'd be very interesting, is used as a generational name. So all of the siblings would have that same middle character.
Okay.
And then the last syllable would be something different. And they do try to find things that mean good things, like Bao means treasure. But also they try to be very scholarly about it. You don't want to sound stupid.
Mm-hmm.
to your neighbors.
Right.
Like, in even in America, we can say, oh, that name sounds kind of hick.
Yeah.
You know, or they'll try to take from from their family's history. Like, my own Chinese name, the middle character for me and my sister, is based on the city where we were when I was born.
Mm-hmm.
So it, you can kind of take bits and pieces like that as well.
Oh, very cool. So, I'm actually going to jump ahead to the player characters section of the book, now that we're talking about the character names. You mentioned that the first name in the three syllables is usually the family name.
Yeah.
So we have, I'm going to jump to, let's see, page like 111 here with Ma Wei Xing.
Yes, so Ma would be the surname.
Mm-hmm. And did I say the rest of that correctly?
Ma Wei Sheng, yes.
Ma Wei Sheng, all right. And that, so, you know, when we say that, that's why we say he is the son of the great General Ma. It is a, you know, his family name comes first there. So, let's see. And then, of course, we have, page before that, we have Han Dragon Dog Ping. How would you say? Yeah.
So his name only has two syllables, which is also perfectly fine and very common, but Han would be his surname.
Her.
Sorry. Oh my goodness. I'm looking at the table of contents. I'm not looking at the actual page.
Yeah.
So I didn't see a picture. That's the problem a little bit with names like this.
Mm-hmm.
Where it's very hard to tell without meeting in person whether they're going to be a man or a woman.
Are most Chinese names gender non-specific like that?
Well, most of them, you would see what the characters are.
Mm-hmm.
So then you would know the actual meaning of the word, and if they had lots of men's names have words that are very strong, that are very yang feeling, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And women's names would have very, like, flower words or things that are, look nice or smell nice would be used for women's names. And things like metals or strong things would be used for men's names. So if you see what the actual meaning of the character is, it's much easier to tell. But sometimes you still can't tell, and that's kind of difficult if you're not meeting in person.
Cool. So let's go ahead and just sit back from the text a little bit and actually just kind of throw out a couple of useful phrases that some people could use in their role-playing game, like if they wanted to just pepper the dialogue with some quick phrases in Chinese that would kind of add a little bit of flavor. Like, if I'm pronouncing it correctly, thank you would be xie xie.
Xie xie is thank you. That's right, yes.
Xie xie. What are a couple of other good choice phrases that we could give our audience?
Well, a quick reply to thank you is 不用谢.
不用谢.
Yes. Which literally means no need, thanks. So you're saying, oh yeah, no, it's no problem. Don't thank me.
Okay.
Because that ties into Chinese culture, where if you're saying thank you to someone, you're sort of putting them at a distance from yourself socially.
Okay.
And saying, oh no, don't thank me, is sort of bringing them back into your social circle.
Okay.
Very cool. One set that I would really like to raise is tied closely to the Japanese word senpai,
mm-hmm.
which is used a lot. Mm-hmm. And this would be great for wuxia, especially if they have the same shifu. If you have the same shifu as your companion, you refer to them like a sibling.
Okay.
And sibling words in Chinese are separated based on if they're younger or older than you.
Mm-hmm.
As well as if they're a brother or a sister.
Okay.
And so younger sister is Mei. Older sister is Jie. which is J-I-E. Younger brother is Di, and older brother is Xiong. And so in front of that, you would add Shi, which is the same Shi we had earlier in the glossary for nobles.
Okay.
So a Shi Mei would be someone younger than me who studied with me under the same master, who is a woman.
Okay.
And especially, I think, for gameplay, if you're traveling with people that you studied together with, that would be how you refer to them instead of referring to them by name.
So, you know, speaking in terms of fellow Kung Fu students, a younger, quote-unquote, sister, I would call a Shu Mei.
Yes.
Shu Mei. And an older sister would be?
Shi Jie.
Shu Xie.
Yes.
Okay. And then a younger brother would be?
Shi Di.
Shi Di.
Yes.
And then an older brother would be?
Shi Xiong.
Shi Xiong.
Mm-hmm.
Very cool.
Because in China, they tend to not like referring to people directly by name. You want to refer to them by what they do or who they are.
Or how they relate to you.
Or how they relate to you, yes.
Very cool. All right. So, let's see. And of course, the usual survival words or phrases, at least in modern day, are how do I order a common drink or food item, and how do I find the bathroom?
Okay. Bathroom, that would be whole sentences. I don't know if
okay.
we want to go there, but...
let's focus on the food. That's what people
really
want.
Let's focus on the food. Yes. Yeah. That's better.
It's probably going to wind up in conversation more often. I hope.
So
it depends on the game, I guess.
It depends on the game. I would assume that most people stopping at an inn on the roadside would be ordering liquor.
Mm-hmm.
And liquor is jiu.
Jiu.
J-I-U with that low dip tone.
So, J-I-U, Jiu.
Jiu.
Okay.
And what I would say if I walked into an inn and I'm trying to order something, I would say, Lai Bei Jiu.
Lai Bei Jiu.
Come, a glass of liquor. And they bring it to you.
Excellent. What about tea?
Cha. Tea is cha.
Oh, that's the same as it is in Japanese.
Yes, very, very similar.
They put the honorific...
They don't have the tone.
Yeah, they put the honorific in front of it where they call it ocha.
Yes. And you would order it the same way. Lai yi bei cha.
Lai yi bei cha.
Yes.
All right. And then how about meat bun?
Rou bao.
Lou bao.
Rou bao.
Lou bao.
Yes. R-O-U-B-A-O.
Oh, R-O-U. Okay. Rou bao. All right. Now, of course, in a fight scene, are there any little phrases that someone might use, like, to either brag or threaten or surrender or claim victory that you might throw in there?
That's a bit hard for me. I don't use those every day.
I'm just trying to think of things that people could like easily pepper their dialogue with.
That's true. Well, to surrender is tou xiang.
Tou xiang?
Yes. I feel like I need to go watch some old kung fu movies.
Okay.
In Chinese.
Well, that sounds like a great idea for our listeners too. I think we've probably have a good number of samples in here as it goes, and we've hit the hour mark. So we'll go ahead and call this the end of our first session.
Okay.
For our listeners, if you guys enjoyed this podcast, please leave comments. Let us know if you want me to bring Robin back for a future scenario. And do you have some other questions that you'd like to have her answer about Chinese culture or about Tianxia culture and all of that? That would be great. Robin, thank you very much for joining me.
Oh, it was my pleasure.
And I had an excellent time. I learned a lot. And I do hope to have you back on the podcast again soon.
Thank you.
All right. And to all of our listeners, as always, stay vigilant.